Good morning. If you haven't done so, go ahead and get quiet. Be still. Be receptive. Invite the Father to speak. And then listen with your intuition. Listen with your soul faculties. We're continuing our study of the Infinite Way, in particular, the wisdoms. Now I have here in front of me the little black book that was originally published, and there are no wisdoms in it. And I have here the little white book, which came out later, and in it are the wisdoms. Both books are called The Infinite Way. This version in the white book with the wisdoms is 1947. That's when it was published. So, let us dive right in. Here's where we left off last week. God is not in the human scene. If you were aware of the significance of this statement, you could lay down your life and pick it up again at will. Now, when I was looking at this and meditating, this is what came to me, and I suggest you take it into your meditation. God is not in the human scene. And neither am I. God is not in the human scene, nor am I. So what you're seeing in the human scene is not you. Life is not at the mercy of matter. There's another wisdom that goes with it. The body is not self-acting. And this one is beautiful. God is not power. When you reach the center of consciousness, your consciousness, you find a complete stillness, a deep well of silence. It is not power, since there is nothing for it to be a power to or over. It just is. So we can shorten this to one sentence. When you reach the center of consciousness, you find a complete stillness, a deep well of silence. It just is. Gaining an awareness of God does not produce harmony. God's presence is the harmony. Elsewhere, I remember him saying, God does not send you an apple. God is the apple. Now it seems like it's in contradiction to God is not in the human scene. But it's not. God doesn't send you an automobile. But when you realize God's presence, when you feel it, if your need is an automobile, one will appear. Now, I had that happen many years ago. I was leaving Florida, going back to California, but I didn't know how. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said, I have a car you can have. And he signed his Gremlin over to me. And I hopped in that Gremlin, and I drove it all the way from Lakeland, Florida, to Los Angeles, California. And when I got to Los Angeles, I traded that old Gremlin in for a brand new Hyundai. And so, when I needed a car, one appeared. The only error is the sense of God's absence. The awareness of God does not dispel this error. God itself is the only harmony. It doesn't dispel the error, it reveals harmony where the error appears to be. No one can reveal God to another, but by revealing the nature of prayer, we place him in a position to receive the God experience. The God experience can come only through the correct understanding of prayer. Since prayer is the point of contact with God, prayer is the avenue of awareness of God. Prayer is the preparation of consciousness for the God experience. Seeking guidance from God at this stage of your unfoldment will set up a sense of separation from God. It gives a sense of God and someone needing help, direction, or wisdom. Actually, you need to let God be your life. Then it lives, it acts, it performs, and is your very being. So there's a stage, a state of consciousness in which you stop seeking guidance from God. How can you say that? Because, as you have said to yourself, my oneness with God constitutes my oneness with all spiritual being and idea. And so you already have the wisdom within you. It's only a matter of learning how to contact the center and then rest in it and let the wisdom unfold. In our beginning days of meditation, we pondered or contemplated God, the qualities and nature of God as we understood him. As we rose higher in consciousness, we learned that any idea of God that we could entertain was not God himself, was only a concept of God. Thus, we entered the stillness of mind, leading to the deep silence of my peace, and there experienced God. Now, this God experience means you experience the conscious awareness of his presence, of its presence, really of your presence. In our student days, we sought God or truth as a means to health, peace, security, safety, and harmony. Now we know that these are not to be found outside of him, and that the experience of God is our only desire. Now we have risen above the desire for health, or aught save him alone. All must rise above the desire for peace, health, joy, and abundance. And this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God. He has said repeatedly, he says in the New Horizon, this experience does not come until we have overcome our desires for anything else. So, as soon as possible, as soon as you can, drop these desires for health, for supply, for companionship. Just drop them. Stop working on them. Instead, work toward having the inner experience of God's presence. All of these things will fall into place. All of these things will be added unto you. It's very difficult and a little bit strange in that we come to an Infinite Way practitioner seeking health, seeking supply, seeking companionship, because we're told that by practicing these principles, these things shall be ours. So we practice the principles, and nothing happens. And we say, what gives? Then we're told the second part, which is, you have to stop wanting any of these. You have to come only to fill your cup with God's presence. Yes, come to the well of contentment within and dip your cup in to the presence of the living God. Then the mind interprets that as harmony, as fulfillment, as supply, as companionship, as health. And we say, these things have been added unto us. So it's kind of like learning to sit down and stand up at the same time. Breathing in and breathing out at the same time. To be or not to be? That is the question. Seeking the objects of good, such as pleasures, things, and places, for the joy of them, is a barrier to spiritual unfoldment. Seeking only the realization of God, pleasures, things, and places of joy naturally come into our experience. Then our pleasure is greater in the realization of their source. This one's important. Words and thoughts in prayer are helpful as long as they lead up to the atmosphere of true communion, which is without words and thoughts. When words and thoughts alone constitute your prayer, they become a barrier to the attainment of God awareness, or the awareness of God's presence. Do not be misled. Here is the secret. Fill your consciousness with the Word of God. Hear it, read it, ponder it, meditate upon it. This enriches and ripens consciousness. And this deeper, purer consciousness now becomes the cause, the law, substance, and activity of your existence. This nobler consciousness, which has evolved through study, practice, and meditation, attains the conscious communion with God and reaches through to the deep silence of my peace. Then you are lifted into a realm of atmosphere transcending words and thoughts. Next is the mere reading of truth is but an acquisition of knowledge, and such knowledge will not heal, it will not lift you up, it will leave you where it finds you. The mere reading of truth is but an acquisition of knowledge, not a deepening and enriching of consciousness. It is the deepened and enriched consciousness which is the Christ unto your experience. So how do you deepen and enrich consciousness? Fill your consciousness with the Word of God. Hear it, read it, ponder it, meditate upon it. This enriches and deepens and ripens consciousness. We do not live on the mortal plane of consciousness where evil can happen. Also true would be we do not live on the mortal plane of consciousness where good can happen. God is not in the realm or reach of mind or thoughts. You must transcend mind and thought in order to reach God. Any response on a lower plane than pure consciousness is from one's little s self rather than one's big s self. Big s self. O students, do not strive or seek for heavenly riches in human consciousness. Wait, wait. Seek a higher level of consciousness. There the Father's treasures are as free as air. It is a mistake to believe that human desire and prayer will bring God to your side. Isn't that what millions of people in churches around the world are feeling? That their desire and prayer will bring God to their side? There must be a rising in consciousness until His presence is attained, and there rest. Here truly is a perennial rest from care, concern, doubt, and fear. This is a good one here, too. I forget it at times. Students are often concerned that their own happiness, peace, and harmony are not complete, that they can bring greater good to others than to themselves. This often brings doubts and fears to the student, doubt that God is still with him, fear that a sense of separation from God may permanently hold him. These things come only that the student never shall be tempted to glorify himself or take pride in his own understanding. Yes, in years past, and maybe now, for all I know, But in years past, I had a great deal of difficulty with pride. It almost killed me once. A very wise man said that you're going through this now so that you won't have to do this later on down the path. And he was right. And so there's no place for pride. If a person is dying of thirst, and you offer them a glass of water and they take it, is there anything to be prideful about on their part? Is there anything they can be prideful for reaching out for that glass of water? I tell you, when I reached out to God with all my heart, mind, and soul, it was only because I was not yet ready to die. And I knew that if I went on living by my means, that was where I was headed. So can I take pride because I reached down and took that water from God when he offered it? No, there's nothing to be prideful for. How ridiculous. It was survival. And I abandoned myself to God as I understood God. And suddenly I became aware of a presence. A presence that has never left me all these many years. It's inching ever closer to 60 years since that surrender. I have seen so many things. I am only allowed to share some of them. I hope that you will take these talks seriously and ask yourself, where are you in here? The next one is, I die hard. Yes, you know, it's... You think you've got that ego in a nice little box. You have it trapped. And then it slides out through the window that you didn't even know was there. And there it is, front and center, trying to run things. You have a surrender, and it's deep, and it's powerful, and it's moving. Ah, it's so good to live without the ego. It's beautiful. Free. And then you're walking along and you go into a department store and somebody cuts you off, cuts in front of you with a basket completely full of items. And there's the ego right back. Well, you may not say anything, but you think it, you feel it. It is impossible to maintain a state of consciousness not attained. To assume a state of consciousness not attained is earthly. And here is one of my favorite all-time wisdoms. Consciousness lives itself. You do not live it. See, all your thinking and pushing and plotting and planning and reading and memorizing, none of that will allow you to be consciousness. But in the silence, in the stillness, in your receptivity, you become aware of the presence of God. Consciousness is living itself. Withdraw from personal consciousness as rapidly as possible. Let I die. Now, we started today with God is not in the human scene, neither am I. I and the Father are one, so God is not in the human scene, nor am I. Okay. Even in metaphysics and spiritual practice, the vision has been on more and larger fish in the nets, instead of on leaving your nets and following me. Leave your nets. What are nets, when you look at it? What are your nets? Your nets are your desires, your personal desires. And so, even in metaphysics, the vision has been on larger fish to satisfy your desires, instead of leaving your desires and following me. So much of this has to do with surrender of self, little s self, and waiting, and waiting, and waiting, and waiting, and waiting, until we feel that movement within, and large s self takes over. This is consciousness living itself. And there is no such thing as my harmony, my health, or my supply. His peace passeth all understanding. His grace is sufficient. So if you have no harmony and no health and no supply, what are you striving so hard for? Let go. Let God. Let capital S self, consciousness, live itself. You'll find a resting place. And it'll be wonderful, and it'll be harmonious, and it'll be peaceful. It'll be joyous. And then it'll all disappear. And you find you're back in human consciousness, struggling to make a living, looking for that perfect mate, trying to get your health back. How did I get here? It was so peaceful. I had a very wise man tell me once, there will never be a time when I don't have to surrender. There will never, ever be a time in this life when I don't have to surrender. And something else I noticed several years ago. I worked in a factory and I was putting together digital magnetic tape drives for computer systems. And I would get to work. I would start on the job for that week. And somewhere around 10 o'clock, around break time, I would already have some sort of difficulty going on with someone or something. Eventually, I came to ask the question, is there no way to avoid this? And the answer came, yes. Rather than waiting till you are off the mark to surrender, try surrendering first. And that's what started my morning meditation, my morning reading. So I changed it. I started having a meditation, a little reading and a little meditation before leaving the house to go to work. And I noticed I didn't have that difficulty at 10 o'clock. Oh, sure, by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, something might be disturbing me, but I learned I could take the break given at lunch. I could eat my sandwich and chips, drink a soda, and then I could have a quiet time. I would go out to my car and play part of a Joel tape, or I would go out there just to meditate. And I found that by having that in the afternoon, things went swimmingly well the rest of the day. And then when I got home in the evening, I could have a meditation. And so I learned that Joel once again was right. By practicing the presence and having these 12 times a day meditations for no more than 5 minutes at a time, I could live in the presence of God. Unless something serious came along, I could stay in that conscious awareness of the presence most of the time. Happiness or unhappiness in human existence, what does it matter? Happiness must be known of the Spirit. So that begs the question, what is happiness of the Spirit? Well, I guess we've just described it. Happiness of the Spirit is that peaceful resting place that comes when you're consciously aware of Spirit overshadowing you. Human peace or no peace, what does it matter? Peace must be known of the soul. Health of the body or no health, what does it matter? Health must be known of God. Health of God. God is the health of my countenance. But what is God's health? It's something far different than our idea, our concept of health. I invite you to take that into meditation. What is God's health? And the next one is wealth of the purse or no wealth. What does it matter? Wealth must be known of love. And the next one is something that he must have written when he looked and saw that one of his students was going off the deep end in the wrong direction. In the depths of despair over earthly affairs, this is learned. Find your good in God. Here's the sequel to God is Not in the Human Scene. I have told you the real secret of life. God is not with mortals. Take it from there. God is not with mortals. God is not in the human scene, and neither am I. When the spiritual student's house of cards crumbles, he is near to an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And that's what I explained to you earlier about surrender. Spiritual student, rejoice as the outer building tumbles down, for the inner temple is to be revealed. The outer building tumbles down. That's hard to do that, isn't it? Maybe you thought you were cruising along and you had your 401k filled up and you're about ready for retirement, and then it turns out that someone within the organization mismanaged those funds or even stole them. Well, it breaks your heart, doesn't it? All that you've worked for 30 years, and it's gone in the snap of your fingers. He says, rejoice when it tumbles down, for you are near to a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Yes, you are so near. The mind of the individual seeking help is the Christ mind awaiting recognition. We think that we are human beings. We live as a human being. We think as a human being. Well, what's wrong with that? Nothing. If you like good and evil, if you like the opposites constantly bombarding you, no, there's nothing wrong with it. Well, what about the second part? The Christ mind. What if you live as Christ? What if you go within, find your silence, and there invite Christ to take over? What if you invite Christ to take over your meditation? What if you invite Christ to take over your decisions? What if you take all of your desires and roll them into a ball and toss them to Christ? What if you stand stock still and in the silence you invite Christ? Christ is the way, the infinite way. The man who has his being in Christ, that is, in the conscious awareness of Christ, finds his capacities and abilities in soul, not in the brain or the body or the muscle. Find your capacities and abilities in Christ, in soul. And the next one is, every action of the organs and every function of the body are the activity of the soul, appearing as bodily action. These are difficult to understand. You have to come into the awareness of your Christ self. God is not in the human scene, and neither am I. That should cause you to stand still. That should cause the mind to stop working. God is not in the human scene, and neither am I. Oh yes, the mind wants to take control. Well, then where am I? What am I? There are no answers that can satisfy that mind. Only when you come to the end of that questioning and rest back in receptivity can you then come into the awareness of God's presence. Every skill, every talent, every capacity, and every ability of the mind are really the soul action made visibly tangible. See, we're lifting ourselves out of the drudgery of human existence. We are lifting ourselves into the conscious awareness of Christ, of soul, of spirit, of presence. We live in Him. In Him alone we find our completeness and perfection. Apart from Him, we are as trees uprooted from the ground, as waves separate from the sea. Now I've seen a tree uprooted from the ground. In fact, I have one laying across the creek in my backyard here. It is huge, but it's uprooted. It's dead. I do not want to be a blade of grass that's tossed into the oven. I would like to be the entire universe. And I would like to be that consciously. Supply cannot be limited, since the soul is its source and infinity. What is supply? Have you determined that yet? Is supply the money I have stored up in my 401k plan? Is supply the money I have stored up in my savings accounts? My checking accounts? Joel tells us repeatedly, supply is not that which you take in. Supply is that which you pour out. Because you can only prove you have something by giving it away. I have this. Now I'm giving it to you. And that proves that it's mine. So soul is the substance, nature, action, and law of all form, and is never separate from the form. But you just said God is not in the human scene. That is correct. And now you're saying soul is the substance of all form and is never separate from the form. How do you put those two together? The form to which he's alluding is not visible. There is an invisible form. There is an invisible Christ. There is an invisible self. There is an invisible universe. In that universe, the invisible universe, there are an infinity of forms, all invisible, all eternal, all infinite. Neither circumcision availeth nor uncircumcision. Galatians 5:2 and 5:6. This is the middle path of the infinite way. Since sinlessness is the opposite of sin, it is not this. Since health is the opposite of disease, this is not it. But this too is the middle path. See, when you have opposites, good and evil, health and sickness, aloneness and companionship, poverty and wealth, that's the human scene. God's not in that scene, and you cannot bring him there with your prayers. You must rise out of that scene into your spiritual fulfillment, into knowing yourself as capital S self, as Christ. When you rise into that, you find, well, heaven on earth. You're walking on earth, but you're living in heaven, consciously aware of God's presence. The crucifixion of the self is accomplished when there is nothing left for which you wish to pray. That means when you have no more desires, when you have conquered that, surrendered that, let go of that, you are ready to receive the God experience. I want to look at that expression, the middle path. What is meant by that? He references the middle path many times in his writings and in his speech. Why is it the middle path? Because we are living in duality. We're living in a universe of opposites. Good, bad, up, down, male, female, wealth, poverty, loneliness, companionship, sickness, health. And we operate in those opposites, and those opposites operate in us. And eventually, after many years of seeking, we come back home to our very own soul. In it, we find a rest. A rest from conscious thinking. A rest from feeling the weight of the world on our shoulders. A rest from competition. A rest from struggle. And in that rest, as we lean back into the everlasting arms and feel the presence of the living God, we know all that God has is mine. All that God is, I am. Because of our oneness, I and the Father are one. God is not in the human scene, and neither am I. I am invisible. I am infinite. I am the infinite invisible. I am. Come unto me, all ye that struggle, and I will give you rest. Have you ever been hiking somewhere and you sit down to rest? I used to go to Big Sur in Northern California, and I would hike 1 mile up, 7 miles back, and 1 mile down. And I would find myself in the midst of those huge redwood trees. And right there was a little stream right through the middle of them, with trout in it, trout fish. And on the way there, I remember I would get about halfway. I would get all the way to where it's only a couple more miles, and then we head downhill. And I would sit there with my backpack on, full of groceries and things to fish, and a hammock, and I would sit down, wipe the sweat from my forehead, and I could feel a breeze coming in off the ocean. Oh, it felt so good, just to rest, just to not move, just to feel almost one with nature. This rest that God speaks of, come unto me and I will give thee rest. This is 1,000 times more involving than that little rest on the side of the hill. This is the rest that passes understanding. This is the rest that never leaves you, never forsakes you. This is the rest that the Father promised to his children, to all those who receive this rest. To them is given the secret God is not with mortals. Take it from there. And so I invite you this Sunday, June 22nd, to make it a point to find this rest in Him. I know it's difficult living in this world as it appears to be. It seems to me that recently, last night in fact, the U.S. dropped some bunker-busting bombs in Iran on their nuclear sites. And you may have feelings one way or the other about whether that was right. But don't invest in those feelings. Virginia Stevenson said one time in Nashville, when I went, that it's like being on a track and there are 50 or 60 cars going around. She said, don't get in any of the cars. And so that's a tip, a secret to help living in this world. Don't get in any of the cars. Don't have an opinion, yay or nay, because then you've gotten in one of the cars. Don't get in any of them. And you will arise above that whole experience. And then rise into your awareness of the presence of God. Stay there. Ride that. In Him you live and move and have your being. Now do it consciously. Don't get in any cars. Live in my peace. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth I unto you. Not as the world giveth means there's no opposite. My peace has no opposite. My peace is eternal. My peace is infinite. My peace is forever. So this day, Sunday, don't get in any cars. Don't have an opinion. Rise above all those opinions and rest. Enter the rest that the Father prepared for you before the world was. And so, the crucifixion of the self is accomplished when there is nothing left for which you wish to pray. Why are you praying? Well, my supply is shortened. Well, I'm not feeling too good. Well, I feel so alone. Now set each of those out by the curb, and the trash man, being God, will come by and pick them up. But when you pull out the driveway tomorrow, on your way to work, or on your way to shopping, or on your way to a friend's house, make sure you don't stop and say, hey, look at that old jacket. I may use that again one day. Look at that lamp. I can still use that. And don't start dragging the garbage back into the house. Set your desires by the curb. and invite the Father to take them away. I know it feels like you'll become a nothing, but the truth is, you will become everything. Without those desires to stand in the way, you can invite the Father to flow. Father, just flow. And then see the presence of God. Watch how it brings fulfillment to every area of your life. Watch how you are dissolved and I, the invisible self of you, capital S, begins to function. I live, yet not I. Christ functions. Well, that brings us to a close this week. That's been over an hour already. And next week we'll pick up where we left off. With the crucifixion of the self is accomplished. Thank you so much for bringing this out. I am very grateful to you for your continued study of the Infinite Way book with me. God bless you. I love you. And I will see you through the week in your meditations. And I will see you next week in the study of the wisdoms. Blessings.